Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Seriously, the podcast from The New Statesman that takes pop culture seriously.
I'm Caroline Crampton.
And I'm Anna Leskovich. This week, we're going to be talking about the social thriller Get Out and the Netflix original series Riverdale.
We've also tried the mobile game Prune for the first time, so we'll be talking about how that went later in the show.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Seriously.
So, Anna, you had a big night on Friday, I understand.
I had a few big nights this week in Caroline. I'm a wild child. No, on Friday night, I went to Comic Relief because one of my friends has been working on Comic Relief. And that was really, really fun. Just like standing in a pit watching like 70 million guests slide onto Graham Norton's like extremely long couch and like celeb spotting, which is, you know, a great pastime of ours.
So you were in like the studio audience for
it?
Cool.
Exactly, quite drunk, but I had a really nice time. And as some listeners of the podcast may know, I was a teenage Russell Brand fanatic, so it was sort of weird and kind of fun to be stood next to Russell Brand in the pit again, reminding me of old times. I used to try and like wiggle my way into shots and things. Yeah, so that was really, really fun. Comic Relief also brought us the much anticipated Love Actually sequel, which I watched on Friday. I kind of thought it was what you'd expect from the Red Nose Day Love Actually sequel. Like, it had all the classic jokes, like we'll relive Hugh Grant dancing along in his prime ministerial home in Downing Street, but we'll also make it Hotline Bling to update it, like that kind of thing, and lots of jokes about charity. Yeah, it was just exactly what you'd expect.
Yeah, I didn't actually watch it yet, but I did read your piece about it.
Yes.
And I really enjoyed the stuff about the Colin Firth character.
Yeah, he seemingly just decides not to learn Portuguese, though he's still with his Portuguese fiance from the movie. And yeah, he just kind of doesn't talk to his wife or children ever, it seems.
They have children now.
Yeah, they have two children, and there's like a scene with them in the car on the way somewhere, and you know, mum's saying, or Aurelia is saying, come on kids, like let's only talk Portuguese in the car, dad's still got to learn. And he's just like you're like, you made an effort to like learn quite a lot when you proposed.
Yeah,
so
learned,
did you just relax after that?
He learned enough for comic effect to do a like weird public proposal.
Yeah,
and then yeah, you'd got what you wanted, so you stopped. That's random.
And sadly, they killed off Bill Nighy's manager, which made me sad because there was just the tiniest whiff of gayness in that plot line, which of course means the gay character has to die.
Yes. Oh, that is sad.
Yeah, very sad.
But if any listeners want to remind themselves of the glories / ignomies of the original Love Actually, you can go and listen to our special episode. It's on seriouslypod.com.
So we've had a few negative Nellies on the iTunes review, guys. Not gonna lie, if you fancy leaving a very positive, shining, glowing review of these two radiant hosts, please do. You just go to iTunes, put your thoughts there. You send us very nice thoughts in all your emails, so please go for it.
Yeah, I feel like our inbox is a place of loveliness, and then our iTunes page occasionally becomes a place of horror, as you know, people who are not true listeners to the podcast just range free with their thoughts. So, you know.
And look, we're posh. We get it. We do accept that. But if you have any other thoughts apart from that, that would be great. Wicked. Okay. So on to some lovely emails. Caroline, you've got one in your hand there.
I do, from Alex in Birmingham, who says, I really loved your devastating evisceration of Ed Sheeran's latest album. I think a lot of you enjoyed that. This was two episodes ago now. And I agreed that the problem was not the subject matter of the problems of fame and money, but his petty and hypocritical take on it. This got me thinking of pop culture that has dealt with the subject well, and the first thing that came to mind was the Netflix animated series BoJack Horseman, which I'm not sure has been mentioned on the podcast before. If you haven't seen it, I'd highly recommend giving it a go. It's both deeply satirical and darkly funny, and deals with the damaging effects Hollywood lifestyles have on people through an absurdist lens, i.e. the main character is a horse person. So thank you very much for that, Alex. Several of my friends have tried to get me to watch BoJack Horseman in the past.
And several listeners, I feel, have emailed in.
And I've always, in my head, gone, I don't want to watch a cartoon about a horse, guys. I don't understand what the big deal is. But I feel like Alex has done a good job of explaining why people like it so much.
Yeah, I've read some good stuff on it as well about how its understanding of mental health. So it definitely seems like something we need to do at some point.
Also, the theme tune was once exploded on the Song Exploder podcast, which suggests that it is quality.
Yes. I've got an email here from Claudine, who says some nice things up front. Apparently we're super great. Thank you very much, Claudine. She wants us to talk about Girls Season 6. She puts, I know this is a very basic, in with a capital B, request, and a polls if you've already covered it, because I may well have missed it, but I feel like this season is doing something strange. Thus far, it's almost making me anxious how piercing it is, and it seems to be pushing in particularly tender places. I feel like there's been a shift, but I can't quite place it, and I'd love your collective analysis. Like the scene where we watch Hannah watch Adam's experience of their relationship. It's almost agonising in that we're being shown so much. I can't place it. Watching her, watching him and her, it feels a bit like accidentally seeing someone undressed through a window. I have been following Girls Season 6 with great interest. I am a Girls fan, and I loved Season 5, which was my favourite season so far, and lots of people are saying that Season 6 is the best season so far. I'm really enjoying it, and yeah, would love to hear your thoughts, Caroline, if you fancy getting back into Girls.
Yeah, because I haven't watched Girls since the beginning of Season 4, not because I fell out with it or anything, just because, as things sometimes do, they drift away. Also, you know, it was on Sky or something, and therefore moderately difficult to track down. So yeah, but I did really like it. I've been trying to avoid being spoiled because I do have the long-term intention of watching it again. So from the little snippets I have allowed myself to see, it does sound really excellent.
Well, they're quite short seasons, so might be worth dipping back in. Series 5 was also amazing. I think seasons 3 and 4 had a bit of a quality dip, but 5 and 6 is great. And also playing a character named Paul Louis, we have Riz Ahmed in Girls Season 6, so it's definitely worth checking out. On to the top item of the podcast. The first thing that we're going to talk about this week is Get Out, an American horror film written and directed by comedian Jordan Peele. Bringing themes of racism and psychological oppression to the genre, it follows Chris, Daniel Kaluuya, as he takes a trip with his girlfriend Rose, Allison Williams, to her white parents' home for the weekend.
You got your toothbrush?
Check.
Do you have your deodorant?
Check.
Do you have your cozy clothes?
Got that.
What?
Do they know I'm black?
Should they?
You might wanna, you know.
Mom and Dad, my black boyfriend will be coming up this weekend. I just don't want you to be shocked, but he's a black man.
I ain't never seen you like this before, bro.
Meeting families, taking road trips. Don't come back all bougie, man.
Come back, get your damn pants up to your damn stomach.
This is a spoiler full discussion. Please go and see Get Out because it's amazing. It's great. It's such great fun. There have been lots of blogs written about how you've got to go see this in the cinema without knowing what's going to happen because the collective audience experience makes it so fun. And it's really good to go and see with a big group of people. So with that in mind, hopefully everyone listening now has seen Get Out. Otherwise, you're just ruining life for yourself and we won't be blamed. Caroline and I were going to say up top, we are two white women who went to see this movie, but we have read lots of really, really cool things by black writers. Aisha Harris wrote a blog for Slate called "The Most Terrifying Villain in Get Out is White Womanhood." She says, "The final subversive trick of Get Out, of course, is that beauty doesn't kill the beast." She's been referencing King Kong and other films throughout this piece. Chris makes it out alive, if now mentally scarred forever. We're used to seeing black people die first in such movies, but Chris takes his place within the horror canon as an inverse of the final girl. The final girl is always a white woman, usually a brunette, who manages to defeat the monster and save herself. She's often young and virginal and definitely not a mean girl. We're supposed to identify with her and wish for her victory. She's who Allison Williams would play if this was a typical slasher film made by a typical white filmmaker, but it's not. She is the villain, an exact incarnation of the horror of being a black person in America, which I thought was really great, the way her piece sort of picked out all the tropes of traditional horror films and was quite like precise in that way.
Yes, I'm so interested in that as someone who is not at all versed in the horror genre myself. I also read and really enjoyed a piece by Ashley Ford on Refinery 29, which is titled How Can Jordan Peele Make a Movie Like Get Out and Have a White Wife Pretty Easily, actually. It just starts with a really great summing up of it. It says, Get Out is a modern day masterpiece. It's a psychological horror movie that takes us into the mind of a black man surrounded by liberal white people and the path to hell expertly paved with all of their faux noble intentions.
Mm-hmm.
Ashley is someone who I follow on Twitter and I'm quite a fan of. She, I believe, is actually in a mixed race relationship herself and writes quite often about the dynamics and the problems and the joys of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought she was a really good person to critique it, really.
Yeah. I also really enjoyed this piece by another black woman, Ivy Annie, in Teen Vogue. Loads of black women writing really amazingly on this film. She places Get Out in just like the general Hollywood landscape.
Mm.
She put, this lack of inclusion extends to the screen too, because while the stereotype that black characters die first is about as big as an urban myth as the premise of many horror movies, the fact that it has become a pretty recognisable trope to begin with is telling. That is, if black characters appear at all, and while 2000s cult classic spoof Scary Movie launched a small wave of black representation in horror by skewering that, not much has changed since then. Jordan's film rightfully challenges the lack of inclusion in the horror space. So there's loads of really cool pieces out there. We also both enjoyed a listicle on BuzzFeed that was just like 22 secret things you might have missed in Get Out, which is really worth looking at because it just picks out so many little details. And I also thought the comments on that piece were amazing. Just random people commenting like things that they'd noticed. I like have a couple here just because they were so good. Someone called Michaela Daniel comments that each of the men that were taken had a special skill set. So Chris was a skilled photographer, someone else was a known jazz musician, the groundskeeper is obviously an amazing runner, and then at the end we see Alison Williams looking for NCAA players to recruit. So it's about like appropriating black talent, which is a really, really good point. Lots of other commenters commented similarly insightful things.
Yeah, so just to give a slightly spoilery summary of the plot, so if you haven't seen the film, but you are inexplicably still listening and therefore don't want to see it, so you know what we're talking about. The film begins with this, you know, attractive, lovely young couple. He's black, she's white, and they're driving upstate from New York to meet her family for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had the conversation that I've heard black friends of mine and also so many people in like culture generally. The moment if you're in such a relationship where you have to say to your white partner, do they know that I'm black?
Mm.
Because there's nothing worse than turning up them not knowing and then having to pretend you're okay with their reactions.
Mm-hmm.
So he asks his girlfriend Rose that and she says, no, it's fine. My dad would have voted for Obama a third time if he could.
Mm.
Therefore, placing you immediately in this realm of like white right on liberals mm-hmm. who maybe aren't quite as liberal as you think.
Mm-hmm.
Then off they go. And then what would you say about the first 40 minutes of the film is Chris finding his feet in this very wealthy white family. There's various tensions as he discovers that they have black servants.
Mm-hmm. And there are just lots of slightly off comments,
yeah.
Right?
And there are lots of slightly off things happen. He himself, like within the direct action of the movie, comments on a few things, like the fact that his phone got unplugged when mm-hmm. it wasn't unplugged before, and just various little things.
And all the sort of racist comments that he experiences
yes.
are racist in that very, very daily microaggressive way.
Yes.
So people saying things that they would probably say they didn't mean to be racist, but, you know, bringing up Tiger Woods or Obama like 3 seconds into a conversation with the only black
yeah.
person at a white party.
Or Rose's brother commenting on his genetic makeup and saying how good he'd be at martial arts.
Yeah.
Basically talking about his physical strength and stuff.
Yeah. That seems
yeah,
so
it's
scary.
So creepy, right? And so the whole time you're really creeped out, but you don't really know why, because you don't know where it's going to go. Like, I'd heard this film before described as a social thriller.
Mm.
So I was wondering, maybe a completely new kind of horror film in the sense that the horror aspect comes from just the accumulation of all this racism.
Yeah, yeah. I also was thinking maybe this isn't going to actually turn into like full-on violence or like full-on horror.
But it does.
Yeah, it really does.
And I think I said to you after I went to see it that I actually was less scared once the like full-on gore had begun than I was beforehand.
I agree, yeah, because there's something so unsettling about the level of creepiness in that first half. When the violence comes in, it's actually, it's almost a bit of a relief because it's like vindication. This guy was right all along. He knew something really weird was going on and he wasn't imagining it. And then, spoilers, Chris does get to like really get some revenge, basically, which is what obviously you've been hoping for the whole film, even though it's a very hairy moment for a minute.
Yeah, so it turns out that this white family are part of a weird hypnotist cult, and each member of the family has their own role. So Rose's role is to lure young black men to the house as her boyfriend. The awful, awful moment when, because she's said, oh, you know, I've never had a black boyfriend before, but my parents are going to be fine with it. And then he finds a box of photographs in a cupboard in her bedroom.
I know.
Which is just like the same shot over and over again with a different man. And in one case,
you know, as soon as she says, oh yeah, you're my only black boyfriend, you're like, oh God, where's this reveal coming?
I don't believe you.
Yeah, it was in the trailer and you're like, oh no.
So, and it turns out that, you know, she's been doing this every few months, bringing someone home, and then they never leave because her mother hypnotizes them. And then her dad, who's a neurosurgeon, like removes their brain and implants the brain of a horrible racist white person who wants to be young and fit again.
Mm-hmm. Any black people that Chris has interacted with in the home are actually sort of like grandparents or family friends who have been put into these bodies as a way to like continue their lives past their sort of natural lifespan. And it's just that general, like, black lives don't matter compared to white lives kind of idea.
It's treating black bodies as like meat, essentially, isn't it? And saying the mind, your mind is completely irrelevant. We will strip it out and we will replace it with the superior white mind. And also what you said at the beginning about they're basically almost doing this to custom order, aren't they? Like they are seeking out black people with particular attributes because that's the one that their client wants to have, you know. So Chris has been picked because he's a photographer and he has a really, really good eye for an image and for art, because the white person who wants his body is blind and an art dealer.
Yeah, it's sort, and it's playing on that language of like slave auctions. And one of the commenters on this BuzzFeed piece we mentioned earlier noted that in a famous slave owner's speech about, you know, how to train a great slave, they were saying, you know, destroy the mind, keep the body, which is basically what is going on in this movie too. So it's like really, really horrific, but so brilliantly done. And the details really do make this film. I think it's clearly Jordan Peele, who is a comedian, right? This is his first feature film.
This is his first feature film.
He's just clearly got an eye for the sort of creepy and symbolic details that can really turn a film from, take it just up to a new level, which I really loved.
Yeah, so he did an interview with the Another Round podcast in which they talked about many things, but one of the things they talked about was the scene right near the end when Alison Williams's character, she's been unveiled as creepy racist. And incidentally, I found her makeup look so interesting. So at the beginning, she's all like sun-kissed and with a fringe. And like, paler. I'm just Rose, like a normal like girl next door, your girlfriend. And then by the end, she's like dead straight hair, high ponytail, incredibly pale, high cheekbones. Like,
yeah, someone also noticed they put her in like colonial hunting gear at the end. Like, she's like got a white shirt and sort of khaki trousers.
Just before the sort of final scene, she's shown sitting on her laptop researching new people to prey on. And she's drinking a glass of milk and she's got multicoloured breakfast cereal like in another bowl. And she picks up one like Cheerio, bites it in half and puts the rest of it back in the bowl and then has a drink of milk. And they asked Jordan on the podcast, like, did she just improvise that or was that like... Because, you know, lots of people have commented on the symbolic of like she doesn't want the white to mix with the coloured, so the milk and the cereal. And he was like, no, I told her to do exactly that. I knew it would be deeply creepy if she just took three sips of milk after eating half a Cheerio.
Alison Williams, it's part of her almost brand, but like her, she brings that super level of control and manipulation to roles, which is why she's so kind of creepy as Marnie when she's like in full Marnie mode, because she is so manipulative and can be so emotionless in certain areas. And I think Alison Williams can just deliver the word babe, said with such emotional detachment and like absolutely zero affection, which she does in this movie where she's like, you know, I can't give you the keys, babe. And it's that bib that you're like, oh my God, you're a psychopath. It's all part of that like weird control and separation and manipulation that's going on.
I mean, I could talk forever about this film.
Me too.
I highly recommend listeners go and see it because it's just a text with details that you will continue to unpick for weeks afterwards.
Yeah, and just to continue a Seriously tradition, shout out to Daniel Kaluuya from yes. Skins.
Yes.
We're loving all the Skins stars doing so well. He played Posh Kenneth and he also wrote some Skins episodes. So
he did, and he, you know, he got criticized by Samuel L. Jackson, or not criticized, but when Samuel L. Jackson made his comments about why are all these black British actors getting roles in the US? We should be promoting our own talent. It was Daniel Kaluuya who he picked out. He said, you know, why is this guy starring in this very American movie?
Well, he was great.
Movie?
So.
I mean, the answer is clearly just because he's really talented. But again, it was something that Jordan Peele said in that interview. He said, you know, I wrote this movie, we got the budget for it and everything, and I was looking around, I wanted to cast, who's the 26-year-old black guy who can open a feature film, who's like a movie star, that's who I want. And he was like, there just really isn't anyone. Like, there's a couple of people, but they were a bit out of my reach budget-wise, and I was like, oh. So he had to be a bit more creative and obviously go abroad and look for someone. That's why.
Yeah, no, and he's brilliant, and the film is brilliant, and you should also read all the brilliant pieces by people who aren't white ladies like us and go and see it.
Now we're going to talk about Riverdale, which is an American teen drama based on the characters from Archie comics. Archie Andrews and his friends Betty Cooper, Veronica Lodge and Jughead Jones investigate the disappearance of Jason Blossom, their fellow student at Riverdale High.
Oh my God, Jason.
A kid is dead, Archie, and she's telling you not to say anything.
I'm putting myself.
I don't know what I'm protecting.
I'm doubting everything about myself, about Riverdale.
The choices you're making right now, they do have consequences. Tell the story,
so I believe. Yeah, and it's a CW production, isn't it, for Netflix? Which sort of explains its like Gossip Girl, teen drama-y lineage. But it's kind of part that and then part mystery because of, as you say, the Jason Blossom disappearance slash murder.
It's also, am I right in saying, been landing on Netflix one episode at a time?
It's a weekly thing,
which really confused me because I only started watching this like last week in preparation for this episode, thinking I'll watch like two or three episodes. Have now watched all of the ones that are on Netflix, haven't slept enough, and actually the other night deliberately stayed up to watch the seventh episode, thinking, it's the last one, there's only seven on Netflix, and then I'll know what happens. And I was like, what?
No. If you had to use the word mystery or teen to describe this, which would you pick?
Oh, I don't think I could pick.
Because my friend got in touch with me like, oh, are you watching Riverdale? Who do you think did it? And I was like, oh, I'm watching it, but so not in that way. I like don't care.
I mean, I do want to know, but only insofar as it might be one of the characters that I'm really interested in.
Yeah.
I'm very much watching it like I used to watch The OC.
I sort of keep forgetting that this is a mystery, and I don't know. Do you think Riverdale is good?
I don't know. Sorry, that was a long pause.
Well, I kind of don't, even though I've watched so much of it.
Well, I think actually for me, the comparison with The OC is instructive. Like,
right.
The OC was an American gossipy teen drama that I consumed when I was about 15 or 16. And it was everything to me, even as I fully acknowledged that it was really bad. And that's kind of how I feel about Riverdale, I think.
But there's been loads of comparisons of Riverdale to Gossip Girl, and I loved Gossip Girl, but I also think that Gossip Girl was really good. And I don't know whether it's I actually just need to rewatch that show and realize, oh, actually the dialogue is really bad in a fully bad way, not just in a stylized way. But for me, the scenes are so short in Riverdale. Every scene is like 30 seconds long, and there is no dialogue that isn't plot related, and none of the dialogue sounds like anything normal people would say. I mean, obviously in teen dramas, a lot of the time, they're not really that realistic. Things like Gossip Girl and The OC, people don't speak like how most people at school speak, or people in general for that matter. But for me, there's something about Riverdale that is just so crazy, over the top in every area that I'm like, is this just really bad?
It really is. And I mean, anytime any female character, you know, gets a speech that's longer than five words, she's denouncing someone and probably using her finger and, you know, threatening someone that she's going to burn them to the ground or something like that, you know.
And I do love that kind
of
thing.
So do I, but it even for me, it got a bit repetitive.
Yeah, and I think there are moments like product placement that really hit mm-hmm. you in the face, where you're like, whoa, and like when they're trying to be right on about things, they're like so right on about it. Like there's a whole episode about like almost revenge porn sort of yes. thing, where they're like
putting slut shaming.
Yeah. There's a great line in that episode. Betty's mother says, someone says to her, do you know what slut shaming is? And she goes, yes, it's when little sluts get shamed for it, which I really liked. When they're a little bit more edgy, I think it is funny. But a lot of the time it's very much like, hey, you can't do that. And like, I don't know, I can't quite put my finger on what this weird amalgamation of several different kinds of show is.
Yeah. That said, I am still watching it avidly. Mm. I think part of the reason I'm watching it is because of the aesthetic and the costumes, mm-hmm. as is standard for a teen drama. Everyone in it is beautiful, mm-hmm. but they're not all beautiful in like your classic Glee way. So for instance, Cheryl Blossom, who twin of Jason, who is disappeared and murdered, is the head cheerleader, but she's not like a kind of blonde preppy girl.
No.
She has really long red hair and she likes to dress like something out of Northanger Abbey.
Yeah, she's kind of like a dramatic, almost like 40s lip and wave
yeah.
kind of figure. But yeah, I wish they dressed Veronica better because I like her a lot, but her clothes are really bad. They're like trying so hard to make her like Blair Waldorf, but it's just yeah. not working because it doesn't have the same level of outrageousness. So it's a strange show. I also have watched a lot of it and probably will continue to. So listeners, thoughts? Help us understand this strange programme.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So last week, I picked Prune from our listener recommendations, a mobile game for Anna to have a go at. Anna, how did you get on with it?
Yeah, it's very, very aesthetically pleasing. Did you play it too?
I did, and I downloaded it, played it intensively for 3 days, and then had to undownload it because I wasn't doing anything else.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. So you got fully addicted?
I got fully addicted.
I enjoyed the aesthetics. So the premise of the game is that you basically grow a tree and then you have to grow it sort of around different obstacles, so you prune branches off to make other branches grow longer, and certain patches of light give you extra growth, but certain patches of heat or walls will stop you from growing. So you have to find, it's sort of like an obstacle course but with a tree that you grow through the obstacle course. I liked it very much, but I found it soothing, I think is the word, but I also was like, this is a video game where you grow a tree. Like, I did get a bit bored.
Yes, that is true. And I also kind of raced through it. It doesn't have that many levels, and I sort of raced through it and then finished it and then was like, oh,
yeah,
that's it, really.
I didn't, although I enjoyed the graphics, I didn't enjoy it as much as Monument Valley and other things like that we did that had a bit more character.
Yes, I think Monument Valley just had more content, full stop. Like, it had characters, definitely. It had more puzzles, and it had, yeah, just more of a story.
Just felt a bit like cheekier in some way.
Yeah. Whereas I think Prune definitely has taken some things from the kind of Monument Valley success. The music is quite similar, actually, and the sound effects and stuff. But yeah,
very simple aesthetic.
Yeah, but it doesn't have quite the level of story or involvement.
Yeah, or personality, maybe. But yeah, it was a great recommendation, and it's really fun to play because I don't have like a video game console, so it's really fun when we get recommended these mobile games on Seriously. So next week for you, I've found another one from the recommends pile because this is a really enjoyable way of doing recommends. So we had an email from Joanna who recommended a graphic novel called Becoming Unbecoming. And it just really stood out from the pile because I don't know whether Joanna just described it really well or whether it is just a really interesting, strange concept. But it's a graphic novel apparently about a series of like really horrible murders that happened in West Yorkshire. But it's really good. I just think it sounds very interesting. And we haven't done a graphic novel for a little while on Seriously, and we do love doing them.
We haven't. I'm excited to try it. I feel like mobile games and graphic novels both fall into the category of things I like when people tell me to do them that I never find for myself.
Yeah, I don't have enough like inherent knowledge of the form / genre, but when people recommend it, it's great. So hopefully you'll enjoy. Thanks for listening to this episode of Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
If you enjoyed the show, why not subscribe to make sure you never miss another episode? We're available in all the usual places you get podcasts, including iTunes.
At our website, seriouslypod.com, you can find all our back episodes, plus our specials on Home Alone, Gilmore Girls, Harry Potter, Love Actually, and Friends.
We're available many other places on the internet, including on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr. We're SeriouslyPod on all of them. We're going to be announcing new events very soon, so make sure you're following to be the first in line for tickets.
We love getting your recommendations for things we should feature, or just hearing your thoughts on what we've discussed. Get in touch on social media, or email us on seriouslypod@gmail.com.
And if you feel strongly that more pop culture needs to be taken seriously, spread the word and tell your friends and family about the podcast.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.